Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of cool, refreshing ginger ale. Every week at this hour, Canada Dry presents Information, please. If you're feeling quizzical, inquisitive, or inquisitorial, dream up some questions for us, and four information pleasers will do their best to answer them. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Charles. Ladies and gentlemen, the questions that I'm about to throw at these experts have not been seen in advance by them, as they doubtless will soon demonstrate. In other words, this is a completely unrehearsed and catch-as-catch-can program. Any expert who wants to take a crack at the answer will raise his hand. If he misses, Canada Dry, known, may I add, in a whisper, wherever fine beverages are sold, cheerfully pays out $10 to the sender, plus $5 for the question itself. Tonight we have our three-ring circus, the versatile Oscar Levant, who composes, plays, directs, and answers the darndest questions in the darndest ways. Franklin P. Adams, leader of the Information Please Glee Club, when not stopped, and conductor of the famous New York Post column, The Conning Tower, and the sports authority, classical authority, historical authority, that authoritative authority, John Turing. This evening, we are especially happy to welcome as our guest of honor a lady who paints, who writes, and who wields one of the meanest tennis rackets ever swung on either continent, Helen Wills Moody, who, among other records, has been the national women's singles tennis champion 7 times. Count them, 7. Now you know the board. Let's see how much they can tell us. The first question comes from Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was thought up by Amelia Washburn Davis, and it has to do with famous exterminators. Exterminators. I'm going to ask you to name an exterminator of each of the following who is famed in legend, song, or story. Someone who is famous as an exterminator of snakes. Snakes. Mrs. Moody.
St. Patrick.
St. Patrick is quite correct, Mrs. Moody. Thank you very much indeed. An exterminator of rats. Mr. Levant.
Edgar Hoover.
Very good, Mr. Levant. Not perhaps famed in legend, song, or story, but a very good answer nevertheless. Now one, a legendary exterminator of rats, Mr. Kieran.
The Pied Piper of
Hamelin. The Pied Piper, yes, of Hamelin. An exterminator of flies. Flies. And Mrs. Moody's very good on extermination this evening. Mrs. Moody.
Flip.
Well, that's a plug for Flip. Plug for Mr. Hoover. Mr. Adams.
Joe DiMaggio.
Ladies and gentlemen, my staff is running wild this evening. I'll accept the third in Joe DiMaggio, but they're not famed in legend, exactly. Mr. Kerr, did you have another one? Mr. Levant?
I had taken you out to the ballgame. That's no good anymore.
No more, no. Mr. Adams stole it from you.
Yeah.
The Brave Little Tailor might be one. The Spider in Won't You Walk Into My Parlor might be another. Remember those exterminators? And now, finally, we've had snakes, rats, and flies. We come by a somewhat unnatural transition to wives. An exterminator of wives. They all have their hands up. This chair has 2 hands up. Mrs. Moody.
Bluebeard.
Yes, Bluebeard. Very good. How did you happen to be an expert on extermination, Mrs. Moody? There's another famous exterminator of wives, Mr. Levant.
Well, there were a lot of Bluebeards, too. There's been many Bluebeards.
Yes, there have been. There was one original Bluebeard, of course, in the famous story. Mrs. Moody, what were you going to say?
And Henry VIII?
Semi-extermination. Yeah,
sure.
He divorced, so. I think we get 4 out of 4 on that. Very good on extermination. Now, the next question comes from D. Tompkins of this city. And Mr. Tompkins is having some fun with a game of tennis. What tennis term reminds you of what makes the world go round? That's almost too easy. Mrs. Moody, I hate to ask it of you. what tennis term reminds you of what makes the world go round? Or perhaps the answer is out of your experience. I doubt it. Yes, Mrs. Moody?
Love.
Ah, yes. You said it very beautifully. So thank you so much.
In her opponent's experience.
What tennis term reminds you of a choice morsel of meat? Mrs. Moody?
Chop.
A chop. That's right. A cannonade. Mr. Adams?
A volley.
Very good. Bachelors and spinsters. Bachelors and spinsters. Monsieur?
Double fault.
That's an extremely good answer. Much better than the one I have down on my card, which is singles. And finally, an awkward dancer. An awkward dancer. Mr. Levesque.
Not a double fault, a football.
Football is quite correct. 5 out of 5. It's pretty good on tennis, too. The next one from Mrs. F. Grant Chatfield of West Haven, Connecticut, has to do with the Tigers, about 4 famous Tigers. In what connection are the following Tigers famous? A burning Tiger. Mrs. Moody.
William Blake, Tiger, Tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night.
In between winning these championships, Mrs. Moody, you must have had time to learn a great many other things. Mr. Marlowe, I must have you down again. That's quite right. Blake's famous poem. A tiger that smiled. A tiger that smiled. Miss Turin.
The one that the lady rode on the Niger. And she,
yes?
When the... let's see. There was a smile on the face of the tiger when he came back.
That's right. Yes. You're giving to us in prose. Originally, it's in deathless and immortal verse. There was a young lady of Niger who smiled as she rode on a tiger. They returned from the ride with a lady inside and a smile on the face of the tiger. A tiger that wore gloves. A tiger that wore gloves.
Sounds like a furrier.
Sounds like a furrier. A tiger that wore gloves. Mrs. Moody.
The Tammany tiger.
You mean the iron hand and the velvet glove? Possibly. I think that's complimenting the Tammany tiger. There's a very more famous tiger than that. Who wore gloves?
Preston.
No, the answer is Georges Clemenceau, former premier of France, who was nicknamed the tiger because of his ferocity. He used to wear gloves all the time.
You don't pronounce it that way in
gloves.
English.
How do you pronounce it?
How do you pronounce it in French?
Clemenceau? How do you pronounce Clemenceau?
No, tiger. You don't pronounce it.
No. You're carrying on this program in English, Mr. Matt. And finally, well, here's one about 4 tigers. 4 tigers that melted. 4 tigers that melted. Mr. Adams.
The tigers in Little Black Sambo.
The tigers in Little Black Sambo. That's quite correct. Do you know the story about that, Mr. Adams?
They ran and ran around the tree until they were melted, until there was a great pool of melted butter.
Yeah, which Sambo took home and used to make pancakes. Do you find
his mother made pancakes, and he ate 57 because he was so hungry.
Adams, you tell me that story as if you believed in it. Every word of it. We got 3 out of 4 on tigers, which passes us. That's too good this evening. The next one, from Henrietta Rosenberg of Newark, New Jersey, has to do with musical compositions. You're going to hear 4 musical compositions, one after another, the titles of which indicate that someone is dancing. Identify the dancers. This, of course, has to do with your knowledge of the titles of these musical compositions. Let's have the first. I wish I could show you Mr. Levan, who is about to engage in a little dance of his own. Mr. Levan.
That's the dance of the hours. The hours are dancing.
The hours are dancing.
La Gioconda.
La Gioconda by?
The Smiling One by Tonchielli.
Tonchielli, yes.
Tonchielli. Very good.
Now let's have the second. Mr. Levan had his hand up from the second note on. All right, Mr. Levan.
Well, that's Hexentanz by McDowell. A witch's dance.
Witches are dancing. The third. Just keep Mr. Levan's hand down. All right, Mr.
I wish I could do it in French. It's the Dance of the Flowers in English and the Nutcracker Suite by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky.
Oh, I love that. The fourth and last. Mr. Levan again.
I want to do this in French.
All right.
Poupée Valsant. That's the Dance of the Doll. It was in a moving picture quite classically once where Basil Rathbone kept saying, play it faster, faster.
Yeah, the things you know, Mr. Levant, that's quite correct. And who wrote the Dancing Doll?
Edouard Poldini.
Edouard Poldini, very good. 4 out of 4 for Mr. Levant. 4 bullseyes. The next one from D. Price of this city. I'm going to ask you to do something. This is a very unusual question. They're going to have three familiar speeches made here, presented by our special expert in linguistic confusion. And I'm going to ask you to do the very simple thing of translating them into English. I'm going to have the first one given to us now. All right.
Trains leaving for home and all for joy, that's
that's perfectly simple. I know that everybody listening can translate them to English at once, so I'd like to make a stab at it, Mr. Levin.
Well, Harmon was one.
Yep, go ahead.
Obviously, you have to go to Albany once you go to Harmon.
Oh, you've been there?
No. You wind up in Montreal.
Oh, but where do you go before you get to Montreal?
Buffalo.
Not on this trip.
Well, I'm thrilled, that's all.
Mr. Adams?
Lake George.
Yes, we've got Harmon, Albany, Lake George. Do you want to have that recited again for you?
Yeah, once more.
All right, let's have it again.
Green leaving farm, Albany, George, Tampa, Albert, Lake George, Blackford, Montreal,
Oh, what did you miss out on, Mr. Levin?
I missed out on Troy instead of Albany.
Albany's right. Albany is quite correct.
We said Troy this time.
Yeah, well, what you thought was Troy, he meant to be Albany. Vice versa. Mr. Adams?
Plattsburgh and Montreal.
Plattsburgh and Montreal. We have two to go. Sure.
In a way, Station Saratoga.
Yes, and one more.
Let him guess the other one, the fellow who just said it.
Well, I think getting 6 out of 7 is very good. The other one was Lake George. All right, let's have the second speech.
Wait for me, man, dog, white man, fight, dog, die, wait for me, all about you.
Perfectly easy, Mr. Levin.
Extra, man bites dog, dog bites man, extra, read all about it.
You left out the fine finale of the story, though. That's very good, though, Mr. Levin. Sure.
Man bites dog back.
That's right.
Mad dog bites man bites back, dog dies. That's the payoff on it. Sure. I think that's pretty good. Let's have the third and last. Nothing would be easier, Mr. Levin.
That's the rooster on Canada Drive.
Couldn't go much further afield. Mr. Chair.
It's one cat telling another that to go home. She doesn't like him.
Yes, but it's it might be, but it's a specific character. Let's have it again.
Oh, Donald Duck.
What did he say?
Donald Duck.
What did he say? Plattsburgh, Montreal.
That's
profane. What do you say, Mr. Levin?
Well, that's profane, obviously.
No. And that wouldn't stop you, Mr. Levin.
I wouldn't touch it.
That's the exact phrase. We do that once more.
Go away.
That's right. Oh, my, go away. You know, I never expected to get any of these. It did very well on them. Very well. 3 out of 3. Have one more. One more question from Miss Eunice Pasco of Chicago, Illinois. Explain the meaning and origin of each of the following phrases. Now, this goes back to your knowledge of classical legend and antiquity. Have to get 4 out of 4 on this. The meaning and origin of the phrase, the arms of Morpheus. The arms of Morpheus. And it's here.
Morpheus was the god of sleep, the son of Somnus, I think, in Greek mythology. And when you were taken in his arms, you went to sleep.
Right, right. Very good.
Like the Great Wolf.
Another plug. Abraham's bosom. Abraham's bosom. Abraham's bosom? Mr. Chairman has just passed that question to Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams has passed it back to Mr. Levin. They're all out.
From the Old Testament.
Yes, but that's not enough for me, Mr. Adams.
There's a play called
Mr. Chairman.
Well, it's a reference in the Old Testament, I think, to the lamb in Abraham's bosom. And then when they were died...
What does Abraham's bosom mean?
Well, you're dead and gone to heaven.
Yes, the repose of the blessed after death. And it refers to what parable in the Bible? Do you remember it? I'll give it to you, and all four of you can go back after this hour is over and read up on the parable of Dives and Lazarus. Dives, the rich man, you know. Well, you go back and read it up. I'll give you half credit on that. Midas's ears. Midas's ears. Sure.
Midas unfortunately agreed to judge a musical contest between Apollo and some friend of his own, and he picked his own friend as the winner, and God said that he had ass's ears and caused that kind to grow on his head.
That's quite right. What else was he famous for?
Having a lot of money.
Yes, touched everything.
Golden touch.
Yes, golden touch.
Midas's ears.
Quite correct. And finally, Charlemagne's foot.
He kicked one over the goal line.
Charlemagne's foot?
Got some on that. Charlemagne's foot was supposed to be exactly 12 inches long, according to popular legend, and that's how we got the unit of measure. That's probably why we call the reign of Charlemagne a foot rule, Mr. Keary, no doubt. Well, that gives us only 2.5 out of 4, so the $10 is going to Mr. Tussle, courtesy of Canada Dry, plus $5 for the use of the press. And we announce a loss to date of only $10. And now let's meet the keeper of the Canada Dry facts, Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Everybody these days is heaping free advice upon the June Dry, but we'd like to be different. And so we're going to offer a bit of advice to that almost forgotten man, the June bridegroom. Many times during the next few months, dear Benedict, your friends of bachelor days are going to be dropping in to meet the new wife. And some night even the boss himself might take it into his head to have a look at the new partner. Of course, these visits are going to call for emergency refreshments. Our advice, Mr. June bridegroom, is to have sparkling Canada Dry water on hand in sufficient quantity to cope with these surprise maneuvers. The boss and the boys will enjoy the better taste and extra liveliness and longer life that the pinpoint carbonation of Canada Dry water will give to their favorite drinks. And now we find that even we can't resist an impulse to impart one scrap of important advice to the bride herself. When ordering club soda, get into the habit of remembering sparkling Canada Dry water. The men folks will be expecting it.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. Your advice to the lucky ones in love was clocked in exactly 62 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from Daphne Knight of Calgary, Atlanta. To what person or institutions do the following mottos belong? And they're in various languages. The first motto is, Oni soit qui mal y pense, the French. Mrs. Moody?
The British coat of arms?
No, I think not quite, though it has to do with
the Great Britain. Royal family?
No, I think not quite either. Mr. Kieran?
It's the inscription on the ribbon of the Knights of the Garter.
Yes, the Order of the Knight of the Garter, which is, of course, a British institution. Perhaps you're thinking of that, Mrs. Moody. And what does it mean, Mr. Kieran?
Cursed be he who thinks evil of it, and there's a long story that goes with it.
And no doubt, if I don't stop you, you're going to tell it to me. Ich dien, I-C-H, space, D-I-E-N. Ich dien. Mr. Kieran.
Ich dien means I serve, and it's the motto of, I think, the current ruling house of England.
Just one part of that house, I think.
Wales,
Mr. Adams. Thank you very much. The Prince of Wales. Ars Gratia Artis. Mr. Levant.
That's got no billy. That's MGM.
That's right.
Levant.
No. MGM. And you know what it means, Mr. Levant?
Ask them and see what happens.
As a matter of fact, I did. I called MGM up this afternoon, and I got a large number of answers. They seem to think that it means art for art's sake.
They're confused.
That would be a possibility. Right. Seems a lovely motto for MGM. Be prepared. Be prepared. That motto, Mr. Levant.
I'm wrong. It's a Boy Scout.
No, you're right. Boy
Scout.
Right. Yes. To be perfectly fair to Mrs. Moody's sex, also the Girl Scouts. Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts share that motto, be prepared.
That's sweet.
Yes, it is rather nice. That's 4 out of 4. The next question from Mr. L. Raymond of Chicago, Illinois, is, in my opinion, a very tough one. We've asked Mr. Levant to do a number of difficult things with the piano during the past year or so. This is one of the toughest. The pianist is going to play a few bars of the introduction to 3 pieces of piano music. And Mr. Levant is asked to continue from where the pianist stops.
Don't stop.
And there should be a slight pause between the pianist and Mr. Levant, so we will know which is which and who is who. Pianist.
It's
lovely. I'd like to have you go on with it all evening. Will you identify the piece for us, Mr. Levant?
It's a very well-known fugue. Almost the most well-known Bach fugue in C minor, the Well-Tempered Clavichord.
Well, it's well-known now that you've played it.
No, there are 48. I'd like to play them all.
Next time. Now let's have the second one.
Mr. Levant?
Just give me the first two bars, please. Identify that for us, Mr. Levant. What were you playing, Mr. Levant?
That's the last moment of the Appassionata Sonata by Beethoven.
Very good. Now let's have the third and last.
I know that.
All right, Mr. Levant, go ahead. Pretty good. One of these days we hope to stump Mr. Levant on the piano, but it probably is in the very distant future. The next question...
Well known, that was by Chopin.
Well known to you, Mr. Levant. Well known to you. Don't be snobbish. The next question from Miss S. Gordon of Boston, Massachusetts, refers to very familiar pictures. What is Washington doing in the picture The Crossing of the Delaware? What is Washington doing? Now, be careful. Be careful. All right, Mr. Adams?
Standing.
You can't go wrong if you stop there, Mr. Adams. That is my idea of caution carried almost to the point of mania. Will you tell us what he's doing exactly? Where is he standing, Mr. Adams?
In a boat.
Yeah, what part of it? It wouldn't be crossing the Delaware on
the bow.
Yes, bow is right. Do you want to go on, Mr. Kieran?
I think he's standing just after the forward thwart. He has his one of his legs up on it, and he has his cloak drawn
what
about.
What thwart did you say?
The forward thwart.
Oh, yeah, sure. I thought you said the third. You're quite right, Mr. Kieran.
Douse my gallant tuckleg.
And what's he doing with his left hand, Mr. Kieran?
He has his cloak wrapped about him.
That's right. And what's he doing with his eyes?
He's looking forward.
Looking forward. That's right, right. Now, what is each of the three men doing in the Spirit of 76? Remember that very famous painting? Now, be careful. What is each of the three men doing in the Spirit of 76? You want to take it, Mr. Levant?
Well, let Mr. Cairn take it. It's better, I think.
All right.
One man is beating a drum, the other is blowing a fife, and the other is carrying Old Glory.
No, sorry.
All right, I'm
That's
on.
What I thought. Sorry, I have to mark you wrong. There's an old man in uniform at the right whose head is bandaged, and he's playing a fife. The other two, one a white-haired man and one a boy, are playing drums. Two playing drums. Then, in the very remote background, unknown marcher is carrying the flag. But he's not part of the famous trio. So, to mark you wrong on that, Mr. Kieran, what is the child lying on in Sir Luke Tildes's very famous picture, The Doctor? What's the child lying on, Mr. Levant?
I think on a table.
Awfully sorry.
I just said I thought.
Not quite, yes. I know, you're trying to cover yourself. So the idea is to get the right answer, Mr. Levant. The child is lying, Mr. Adams.
I think on a couch.
No, we've got a table and a couch.
A cradle.
No.
A stove.
Mrs. Moody.
I think it's in a chair.
Yes, that's quite right. Why didn't you say that before, chair. Mrs. Moody? Oh, you would have saved it for us. Yes. Two chairs covered by quilts, blankets, and so forth. We were supposed to get two out of three on that, and we didn't, as a matter of fact. So $10 is going out to Mr. Gordon, courtesy of Canada Dry. Now, this question from Mr. E. Stone of New Haven, Connecticut. I suppose you board members, you particular ones, are standing at your baseline on a tennis court. You got yourself placed? About how much of your opponent's side of the court is visible to you over the net? Am I perfectly clear? Mrs. Moody? Mrs. Moody?
I don't think you can see the baseline. If
All
you're
about?
Standing... You mean over the net?
Yes, over the net. How much of your opponent's court can you see, Mr.
I don't
Moody?
Think you can see it.
That's quite right. That's exactly right. Mr. Adams, were you going to contradict Mrs. Moody? I think you were. Jared?
I was going to say, it depends on how tall you are.
I said you board members. Now, I don't think that any of you board members is over 6 feet. Mr. Adams, you're not quite 6 feet, are you? Yet? Still going.
Well, I don't think there'd be four of us on one side of the net, either.
No, no. We'll be right on again.
Would there?
Actually, you can try this for yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a net and a tennis court and are not over 6 feet 6. the opponent's court is visible to you only through the net, not over it. If the net were solid, you wouldn't be able to see a solitary thing. That is according to Euclid, who is always right. Well, we announce a loss, then, altogether. Let's see, $20. I have some important news for you about next week's guests, but now Mr. Cross has a word to say.
And Mr. Fadiman, sport is the word I wanted, because this is the time of year when all of us get out to play. And whether it's tennis you enjoy, golf, baseball, fishing, or touring in an automobile, you eventually wish to stop to freshen up a bit. And when you do, there's nothing that can beat an ice-cooled glass of ginger ale. Sparkling, tangy, peppy, and enjoyable. And may we add, order Canada Dry when it's ginger ale you want. For Canada Dry is made with the finest ingredients. Pure sugar, choice Jamaica ginger, and a method of carbonation that has defied imitation. Yes, ginger ale is a refreshing drink. And Canada Dry is known as the champagne of ginger ales. And now our Ways and Means Committee has asked me to make two important announcements. First, this is Hotel Week. And we want to bring to your attention some facts about hotels, which we are sometimes inclined to accept too casually. How much do we appreciate the hospitality that is offered us when we visit a strange city? The service that is available at a moment's notice? The courtesies and privileges that are at our command? In fact, our hotels are the envy of travelers throughout the world. And our second announcement reads, the Information Please book containing better than 300 stumpers is to be found on sale at your favorite book or department store.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. And Mrs. Moody, Canada Dry, thank you especially for coming down to our party tonight, and may I add, doing so brilliantly in half a dozen other fields besides that of tennis. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Churn will be on deck again. We have two guests of honor. Our first guest of honor has been with us before, two or three times, I think. He's the world-famous foreign correspondent, John Gunther, author of the bestseller, Inside Europe, and of a companion volume which has just been published, Inside Asia, which, may I take this opportunity of saying, I happen to think is even better than its brilliant predecessor. Our second guest is something extra special. Listen closely. Next week at this time, we are going to make an acid test of the intellectual ability of none other than Gracie Allen. Tune in next week and listen to Gracie Allen in a new role. To all you listeners, we say, please send your questions along. And if you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if you use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Here's a special announcement. Canada Dry is honored to have had the privilege of supplying Canada Dry water, ginger ale, and flavor beverages to Their Majesties King George VI and Queen Elizabeth at all official functions and aboard the royal train throughout their tour of the United States. All water for cooking and table service used during this trip was supplied exclusively by Canada Dry, the same water that is used in making all Canada Dry beverages. This is Milton Cross saying, good night, all.